to another episode of Reliability Boombox. Nice to have you all here. Kindly brought to you by Reliability Extranet, a group of companies. Today we have a very special guest in Yandi. Yandi is one of the co-founders and creators of Sorba. We thought we'd bring Yandi in to give us a little bit of a heads up on why Sorba came from and how it came to be. So welcome, Yandi. How are you?
Thank you. Thank you, Dane. And, you know, very pleased to be here. Sorba, yeah, this journey started, I would say, around 6 years ago. I personally come from a, academia background, so a university. And, I always had, the dream of finding, bridging the gap between science and actually, real world. That was always has been my dream. And, as I start, working more on the automation side, I actually start working as an automation engineer as well. So PLC, SCADA, HMI systems. But, I always had, this background on the science, machine learning, AI, IoT, big data, distributed processing, and edge computing. So I saw a perfect opportunity, trying to solve those actual problems that happen in real life on the plants, right? And that's how, Sorba started. Everything started with an idea. I remember one time we were, sitting, taking a coffee with Aldo. And I was kind of sharing with him, it would be cool if we can, predict failures in equipment. It would be cool if we can, optimize system using, AI and machine learning. And, he got intrigued by the idea. And that's, how we actually start the whole, Sorba movement. I definitely had a bunch of different things that I already kind of a base proof of concept. So I, in my spare time, I always, kind of were playing around and see, how I can do things. So I had this kind of a POC type of code that it was pretty much the starting point for, what was becoming the Sorba platform. So everything started there, pretty much. The first thing that we realized, the first thing that we wanted to do is doing machine learning, applying machine learning to equipment. And, predictive maintenance was actually the first topic that we found that it was something interesting on the industry. Then we realized that, to do machine learning, you really need to have data. So you need to collect the data. So we had to develop over the time more than 25 different drivers to communicate with the devices, right? The field devices, you have Mobus TCP, Profinet for, for the Siemens PLC, CIP for Allen Bradley, and, so on. You have a bunch of different protocols. Then we realized that, we are collecting all this data, but, to actually being able to use it with a machine learning algorithm, we need to store that data effectively. And when I mean effectively, we need to create some type of auto ETL, so auto transformation and filtering capability that allow you to normalize the data and have that ready, that data ready to be analyzed. And that's a, kind of a different feature that we kind of had to do, right? To get to that final stage where we can apply machine learning algorithms. So after all that journey, we realized that, machine learning is complex, right? So we were pretty much trying to explain to customers how we can solve their problem, but it still was kind of hard to actually do it, right? So we kind of concentrate 100% on the idea of democratizing AI. That was kind of what we were trying to do, how we can make machine learning easy and simple. And that's, everything about Sorba is about that. It's everything from, the data collection, the, creating the algorithms, deploying those algorithms, you know, everything is about, you know, trying to make it easy for the user. The user doesn't need to know AI, doesn't need to do, you know, coding. Most of the time, you have, you know, some time that you need to, you know, be flexible enough to accommodate certain use cases where you need to code. But, you know, most of the time, you don't need to code. You can just, you know, click there and you get these algorithms that pretty much solve a problem for you. So it's, you know, it's interesting because like 5 years ago, there was not really a huge trend on data-centric approaches. And when I say data-centric, you know, on the AI world, everything has been more like a model-centric. So every single data scientist in the world is trying to get those algorithms like fine-tuned, like, you know, small errors. It has been, I think, like the last 6 months to a year, has been a lot of trending in terms of taking a different approach. The model-centric approach is still applied, right? You want to create those algorithms like pre-accurate, but being able to concentrate as well on the type of data that you're collecting, on actually cleaning that data, to normalize that data, to be able to create better algorithms, that has been kind of a trend of the last, you know, 6 to 1 year. And that's pretty much what we have done as well. You know, what we realized 5 years ago, that, you know, to get to a good algorithm, you need more than just machine learning algorithms and being able to actually do all that processing in an automated way. So it's interesting how, you know, how things evolve. And I am glad that, you know, we were right about that one, because it's definitely very important. So.
Awesome. Yeah, thanks, Yanni. That's a very good brief explanation of how it sort of Orba came to be. And it sparks a plethora of questions from my point. I know that we could talk all day about this. I'm sure if we got you wound up about Sorba and data collection and analytics, you could go on for days. Because it sounds like it's something that you're definitely very, very passionate about. So you talked about the predictive maintenance sort of pieces, sort of the one piece that you first sort of targeted to solve. What was the biggest gap that you saw there in that predictive data piece to solve, and how did you go about executing? Also, where was the, in a very layman's term, where was the hole that you got to plug on that?
Well, it's really the biggest, I can tell you before I answer that, I will tell you what was the biggest challenge that we had. And then I'm going to, you know, go to the, you know, to that particular question that you asked. But pretty much the challenge that we had, it was pretty much educating customers. That was pretty much the biggest challenge that we had during the whole journey. Educating customer, because, you know, for a lot of people, this is, you know, AI and machine learning is just black magic, right? So it was not easy, and it is not easy to actually convince, you know, a customer that, hey, this is not black magic. This is actually, you know, mathematics. That's it. It's nothing else. It's science. So when we start, you know, having the opportunity to engage with, you know, customers, you know, one of the things that we realized that, you know, was definitely a gap wasn't the fact that, you know, most of the people through the evolution, and this apply, I think, even today, most of the customers, most of the companies in the world, they typically are really on the data collection, data aggregation portion of their journey. So they are, sometimes they are not even prepared for AI and machine learning. And you know, when we determined, you know, that it was a huge potential, how we can actually bridge that gap, right? So they were not really ready yet, but we could take them and make them ready. And that was, you know, kind of a, but I would say it was the biggest hole that we saw. Just going from only data collection, which everybody has been doing for, you know, a lot of time. I mean, PLCs, HMIs, you have historians that have been, you know, going for a lot of time. But now taking that and making analysis or making decisions that could actually produce some value. And the second thing, it was to actually integrating that into their systems, into the, you know, CMS systems or any other system that could be using that data, even the SCADA system and the HMIs. Because that's another thing, you know, if you have the predictive maintenance, if you have an anomaly being detected or a failure being detected, definitely something that you can communicate back. You can write back to the HMI or the SCADA system or even the PLC in some cases, and being able to use exactly the same channel that they have been using for, you know, for years. That definitely was something unique that we were providing. So it definitely got a lot of attention as well.
I can certainly resonate with where you're at, and I know that over there in the States where you're based, you guys are certainly a lot further along the journey and you've experienced a lot of different things. For Seven and I here, I can relate to the educating of people on what this does, because I think here in Australians, we're laggards in some sense with the data and data collection. And my experience previously with data analysis is it's post-event. It's something happens and then we go back, we dig up all the data, we have a look at it and then try and solve the problem, but we're still operating. And so by the time we actually get to solving the problem, whether we do it through a root cause analysis or some other investigation or just a data scientist looking at it, it could be months down the track, you know, post the event. Whereas I see that what you're doing and the concept of Sorbet is to really collect that data, view all that data, review it live at that point in time, and then use those data scientist techniques or data analyst techniques you via AI to actually do it then and there. So you get the warning at that time that it happens or earlier, which is something that we've started to talk about, which I think leads to that machine learning aspect.
Yeah, and it's you know, one time, I will say around 3 years ago, we, you know, we had a customer that is local here in Jacksonville, that we were trying to, you know, Aldo and, you know, AJ, they were trying to, you know, get in touch. We actually got the opportunity to go and do a presentation. They were kind of interested, but they were kind of, still, you know, I'm not convinced, kind of the education type of thing, right? So they still saw that like a black magic. Well, something interesting happened that, you know, they have, you know, huge boiler blowers, you know, for the wastewater. So they have these huge blowers, and one time they had a catastrophic failure happening. And at that time, they call us and say, okay, without telling us that actually it was a failure, pretty much they provide data and say, okay, can you analyze this data? And, you know, when we actually analyze the data, pretty much analyzing, meaning importing that data into the Sorbet platform and just clicking 4 times, getting the algorithms, pretty much. There's nothing fancy that we are doing on the background, you know, it just exactly the same that Peter and you then will do. It's pretty much nothing special. The special thing is really on the background, the back end side. But in that particular case, you know, we find out that the failure that they had that ends on January as a critical event, it actually started at the end of November the previous year. So they had almost a couple months to actually fix and correct the problem. And because they didn't do that, pretty much that ended up in a catastrophic failure, which cost them over $200,000. So that was the moment where they, I guess, realized and say, okay, this is something definitely that, you know, we need to really take a look seriously. But it's interesting. It's just a journey. It's you know, every single customer have different perspective. But education is definitely a big part.
Yeah, I certainly agree. And I'm sure Seven can relate to that. I know at the moment it seems like Seven isn't saying much and he's just our scribble. he's a really good note taker. That's a really good story. And I know that for us over here, we relate to a similar thing where we'd been given a pack of data and processed it, and it was early failure, and it was very relative to a lot of the industry that we've talked about. We've talked about on this podcast before. But that, yeah, that's November, December, January, that's 3 months, you know, in advance. You had to actually do something about it. And that's certainly the way that I like to explain how the software sort of works. I try and put it in a simple term, but that, as you said, a blower with a catastrophic failure, and they're like, well, what can you tell us about this? Again, they've given you the data after the event, but that's still a stepping stone. It's still a stepping stone for them to help realize that, no, hang on, we've processed that data and we've showed early signs of that failure. So we could have done something about it. And,
yeah.
Yeah.
And it's you know, to be honest with you, there is a lot of you know, false promises as well. That's part of the problem as well. You know, customers have bad experience with, you know, bunch of different POCs, different applications that they supposed to get certain things and they didn't get it, right? So that create part of the issue as well sometimes. You know, another good example is, you know, this customer that, you know, we had, but they spent over 5 years trying to solve an optimization problem. The optimization problem was pretty much, you know, boiler optimization and APC. They spent over 5 years. They got engaged with large company as, you know, Google, Microsoft, you know, kind of all the big boys. After 5 years, they couldn't really provide actual solution for their problems, right? So they, you know, Google and, you know, Microsoft, they have amazing technology, but sometimes, you know, on the AI world, is more than just technology. It's empowering the, you know, the SME, the guy that really know the equipment to actually do it. And that's the lack that sometimes they have. They have the technology, but, you know, you have a set of tools that, you know, you need to know how to use. You need to be a data scientist. You need to pretty much know how to code. You know, that's amazing. But, you know, how many people in the world knows, you know, how to build a machine learning algorithm besides going to Google and just copy and paste, you know, some code and just test it? Okay, that's beside that, it's, you know, that it's just a few people. So, you know, that's one of the problems that sometimes they face. And this customer, they, you know, they spent 5 years, and we got the opportunity after, you know, multiple iteration, we got the opportunity to actually do a POC with them. And luckily we actually deliver, you know, results in 6 months. So what they were trying to solve in 5 years, we actually, 6 months, we had a turnkey solution place actually generating around 5% of savings. And that actually is part of the, you know, the uniqueness as well, Sorba, is really the, you know, how you can go from zero to, you know, a solution in very short period of time. That's another thing. And it's, you know, it's one of the unique capabilities that we offer with all the different applications that we have inside the, you know, inside the Sorba ecosystem. So that's another, you know, another point that I wanted to make is, you know, sometimes fighting with those bad experience that the customer had sometimes is as well pretty hard, but you know, open opportunities as well. After you demonstrate them that definitely you know what you are doing and you have a technology that can solve their problem.
Yeah, certainly, and it is important to sort of stick with it and stay with it. And I think sometimes in big organizations they have a particular way of thinking, and obviously I feel like Sorbo has come about from thinking outside of the box, thinking different to the way that people had already been thinking. So with that thinking outside of the box, another question that came to me as we're talking there. From when this journey started for you about 6 years ago, you know, you had a couple of ideas of this would be great. Imagine if we could do predictive, you know, maintenance better, and we could use AI to help with some machine learning and so forth. What spaces have opened up through the journey of Sorbo that you were surprised by? Something you weren't quite expecting?
One of the things that I was expecting, but I didn't know that will, you know, take so much traction in a short period of time, and it's related to what is known as a unified namespace. So that's another problem that we were talking, you know, 4 years ago about, you know, this whole problem that you have on the industry and the AI world as well. Because, you know, after you cross the line of, okay, I have my data is clean, my data is good, I create all my AI models. Now you can deploy that to the edge, or you can deploy it to the fog, or you can deploy it to the cloud. After you cross that line, the next consideration, the next headache is actually how I manage those algorithms, right? So how I manage those algorithms, how I can have all the structure of my data in a one single source of truth. And when I refer to a unified namespace, you know, there are people that refer to a unified namespace just as a data structure. So if you have plan A and plan B, and maybe they have areas inside, you know, having kind of a map, right, of every single equipment, every single sensor tag in one common place that has an equivalent on the database as well, how the data is stored. I take that further, and I think that unified namespace as not only the structure relation to the data itself, but everything that you are doing with that data. So I am referring to a script. So what happens if you create a script? So that script is part of your unified namespace. What happened with your machine learning algorithms? Those become part of unified namespace. So imagine this central place where you can have the structure of your data. You have your assets, you have your, you know, your groups, you have your tags, and then you have your machine learning algorithm, you have your scripts, you have your flows in case, you know, you are doing some orchestration. You have your alarms. So one single central place where you can manage the whole life cycle of the whole configuration of the whole system. That's for me. I didn't expect to move so quickly. Right now, unified namespace, you know, companies, big corporations especially, they are realizing that multiple of them has mess. And one big company that have demonstrated the importance of that is Amazon. So Amazon actually is pretty much is as successful as it is because they could streamline through technology the whole logistic problem. From you going buying something on internet all the way to delivering your home, like pretty quickly. And that was the only reason why they are able to do that so quickly, is because the whole technology and the whole unified namespace they have on their company. So kind of Amazon demonstrate to everybody the importance of that. And I guess, you know, other big corporations that are taking consideration the same approach, the same, you know, unified namespace concept. So that was one that I wasn't really expecting to be moving as quick as they are moving right now, at least here in the United States.
Yeah, awesome. I see that's the first time I've heard of that in that aspect, but I see where that fits with the Solver, and I certainly agree. I think it's a very important thing in the way that we collect and process the data and keep it all in that same sort of space. So
how many times you have in a customer and they had multiple databases, data from one device going to one place, data from another device going to another place, and they are trying to, you know, merge this data,
merge it together, mold it.
Spaghetti's architecture, right?
Yeah,
that's, you know, my day to day is facing that same problem.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, I'm gonna let Seven chime in here for a second. I know he's been enjoying his scribbling, but I'm sure he's got some comments or something.
Love scribbling. doodling is another word. Doodling. I don't know if you can see me scribbling all this stuff, but I've got a picture of a unified namespace now, so it's, you know, even for me that's given me more clarity of what it is. And I love the term spaghetti architecture. I've been there and done that, you know, where, you know, everyone's collecting data in all these different systems. You need to get it into one spot, and then you can lever off that and take advantage of that data, no matter where it comes from.
Yep.
Yeah. Anyway, quick question. It's all in the name. What does Sorber stand for? What's in the name there, Yandi? It's all in the name. What's Sorber stand for, mate?
Let me think about it, because I don't even know. To be honest with you, that name, that was initially... You know about the CORBA architecture? CORBA was the first mainframe developed by IBM. And, you know...
CORBA.
It was the first, you know, it was... So we say, okay, smart. Smart, definitely what we are trying to do is making a smart machine, right? So we say, okay, CORBA, you know, it's cool. I think, you know, this really works. But, you know, after that, Aldo come out with, you know, I think it's a smart, operational, real-time big data analytics. But, you know, he probably will, you know. Yeah. Smart, operational, real-time big data analytics. But for me, sometimes, you know, every time that, what is CORBA? I was like, I always remember the CORBA first, and then I remember the smart operation.
CORBA, yeah. So that was from IBM. What does CORBA stand for? Whoops, IBM, not IBM.
Yeah, I don't remember. I know it's, it was a that was a long time ago.
Yeah.
There was a first main framework from IBM.
Oh, first mainframe. Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, what's the difference between data and big data? So why the term big data? I can understand smart, because smart,
so
operational.
That's it.
Yeah. But big data, that's one thing. What does
Big data really is a very fuzzy, you know, concept. So big data, you know, depending on the person that you ask, they will have different opinion. And certainly there is no, at least that I know, there is no really clear definition in terms of, you know, after so many terabytes, this is big data, you know, less than this is, you know, small data. But, you know, it's everything that, you know, when you have a large amount of data that is very heavy, that you cannot actually process with one single computer. So you need, in order to store the data effectively, you have to have a cluster of servers to actually cluster. Yeah, that's at least how, you know, I see it.
Yeah. So I've we've talked about internally about things blowing up, because they don't follow big data principles. People run out of computing power, they run out of memory storage, all that sort of stuff. Whereas with big data, because you've got a cluster of computers that all talk to each other, it can just keep on growing.
Yes, and that's a very important, you know, the horizontal growing, scalability, that's very important.
Yeah, yeah. And, down here in Australia, we've talked to people where they've blown databases up, they've imported enough, like, and I'm talking about sensor data. So in this spectrum of what we're all about, like machine reliability, you know, if you're collecting, if you think about it, you know, machines can produce a lot of data because, you know, they're high speed things, you know, and they've got hundreds of sensors on them, and you know, you can be collecting data 5 times a second per sensor, and that could be a temperature in the hundreds of degrees. So you've got a pretty, like, from a data point of view, you've got truckloads of it. And you know, I've heard multiple times, and even experienced it multiple times myself in my corporate life, where we've blown up things because we've had too much data.
Oh, absolutely, so, absolutely.
Yeah.
Especially when you are actually, vibration is one of the big part of that, because I mean, it has so much data that, yeah.
Yeah, because you got to collect it at such a frequency for it to be effective.
Yeah.
I totally agree. Yeah, and people have experimented with things and crashed computers and all that sort of stuff, but with big data, yeah. That's excellent clarity for me. That's I understand it more, because you know, a lot of the IT people talk big data, and there's a lot in the marketing, but what does that actually mean? Essentially, it means it's scalable. We can grow you can grow it. Chuck another computer at it, and it just does it. Yeah, awesome. I'm about done, mate.
Yeah, no, that's fantastic. I think, like Seven, we find that in these podcasts, Yandi, we always tend to learn a little bit more along the way as well, even if it's just Seven and I on our own, just chewing the fat and going through a problem. As we sort of talk it out, we get a little bit of clarity and a little bit of understanding. And I think you've really helped us with that today, and I hope you've helped our audience as well. I think it's important that we do work on the educational piece for people, help people understand how this can benefit us, and how it can work together, and how it can make people's lives simpler and easier. And that's what we're definitely about down here in Australia, is using these tools to help people along their journey. So, Yandi, thank you very much for your time. I really appreciate everything you've shared. I appreciate all the work we get to do with you. It's been great to sit down and have a chat.
Absolutely. Thank you, guys. And definitely, next time, I definitely need to be in a beach with, a nice view. So.
we'll see what we can do.
I love that view. The view that you have is very good.
Yeah. It's one of the joys, one of the perks of traveling around and working while we go, we get to find these other
spots.
That's good.
So, I always say that, whatever you do, just enjoy the ride. I think that's part of what, in our Sorbat team, that's what we do. We enjoy the ride. And, So thank you, guys. Yeah. Thank you very much for the invitation. And hopefully that clarified a little bit more about Sorbat, where we come from.
Yes, it certainly did. And, don't worry, we'll certainly get AJ and a couple of the other members of the team on down the track and get their views on things and get their story, because I think it's nice to hear all sides of the story. We do really appreciate you, and Yandi, and thank you for your time.
And thank you.
To everyone else out there, thank you. Smash the like button, subscribe, join, pass comments. If you have any questions or feedback for Yandi or ourselves, let us know in comments or follow us up on LinkedIn. Anyway. Thanks, everyone. See you later.